is David Makoski, who is a collaborator of mine, and he's from France, and he was not able to fly, but he sent me some text and asked me to go through the slides and try to explain what he has worked on. So I'm not David Makoski, but I will try to do my best to present the slides he has, and I think it's relevant to some of the things we heard about this morning. So he called his talk, Should We Use Bayesian Methods in Meta-Analysis? And really, I think if he would give me some freedom for interpretation of his work, I think this is really about using Bayesian methods to solve the problem missing data in meta-analysis. So I think that's the main approach the main objective of the work that he's presenting. So I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction of Bayesian methods and try to explain why I think they're relevant in this case. David also did a review of articles that have used Bayesian methods in the literature and try to identify some of the advantages and the things that we have there. And then show a very simple case study of a well-known paper on organic versus conventional yields. So maybe some of you know, but one of the basic ideas of meta-analysis really rests on the idea of conditional probability. And I think when I sometimes talk to people, I think the framework for Bayesian analysis works a little bit closer to the way we think. Like you have an idea of how something works, even it might be conceptual, even if it's not mathematical or numerical. And that's represented by some prior distribution. That prior distribution can be very diffuse in terms of you say, well, I think the value is this much, but there's a lot of uncertainty. So the idea is that you use data to update what you're thinking about a given system or what the value of a parameter is. So the Bayes theorem, just all it does is you have some definition of your prior distribution, and then you use the likelihood, which the likelihood is really the probability of the data giving some parameters to update the posterior. So if you see between these slides, I think the posterior gets a little bit narrower. I think he could have emphasized a little bit more. So some of the difference, and I think if you've gone to the workshop, you'll see when I present some of the formulas, meta-analysis is very much fits into a Bayesian framework because in the classical framework, I think one of the difficult things to understand is when we say things like, well, there's a true unknown parameter that is fixed, that is unknown, but that doesn't match with reality. No, there's not a true fixed response of, for example, corn yield to nitrogen. It's just variable by nature. So the idea that any parameter is fixed is something that is relaxed in a Bayesian method. The concept of taking prior knowledge into estimation of parameters, it can be taken into account into the framework of Bayesian methods. It's not taken into account in classical methods. I think this is a point that has been controversial sometimes because it feels like, well, you can influence your outcome by just providing different priors or making those priors more or less strict. But I think if you relax the knowledge of priors, then they have very little influence of your outcome, and the data is going to overwhelm everything that you say instead of priors. In both cases, we use the likelihood, and the traditional classical methods, they're even in residual sums of squares kind of method, least square methods, or any other likelihood methods, you're maximizing the likelihood, and you're using that in Bayesian methods as well. And again, the likelihood is really the probability of the data given the parameters, but that's not usually what we're interested in. The computation is getting a little bit easier, but the Bayesian methods usually require more involved iterative methods, and I think that's relevant for his David's case study. So this is the framework, or the classical framework of random effects models, but you see this is also the framework for meta-analysis, but you see how we have an effect size observed. That's why sub I we have n. In this case, both alpha and sigma are sub I, meaning that depends on the individual studies. And then one of the critical things in meta-analysis is really estimating this between study variation. So the alpha is really the effect size of each study, but now we assume that it has a normal distribution with some unknown mean, this mu, which in a classical context is a fixed term, and then this unknown variance that we have to estimate, tau squared. And one of the features of meta-analysis, both meta-analysis and Bayesian approaches, is like this idea of hierarchy, that every parameter in your model, you could model it at infinitum. You can go into infinity, you know, modeling the hyperparameters, but usually there's no need to do that. So that's the true individual effect size, how the effect size is estimated. This is the variance, which if you've gone to the meta-analysis workshop, you see that in meta-analysis we assume that this within-study variance is known. We retrieve it from an individual study, and it's this standard deviation or this level of uncertainty that we talked about in the previous meta-analysis descriptions. That's a true mean effect size sometimes, but we're trying to estimate it between the study variance. So the way David set up this problem is, this is a very simple problem where you have the effect sizes observed, which might be the log of the response ratio, which you have the alpha sub I, the effect size of each individual one of those. We're trying to estimate really what we want to know, what you would report in a meta-analysis, let's see if I have the mouse here, is this mu, which is going to be your estimate of the effect size. So for example, the effect size of the response plants to CO2, or difference between organic and conventional, and the between study level. This variance is usually very large, and that's what a lot of researchers were trying to do this morning. You know, how do we partition that variance? You know, what is the effect of different practices or nitrogen fertilizer rate and so on? So David's approach here could think of this as similar to multiple imputation. The idea is you don't have the weights, you don't have the estimate of the variance or the estimate of standard deviation for every single observation in your meta-analysis. Kesh talked about having only 10% or maybe 20% and so on. So there are some of them that you have missing. They're missing. You don't have that information. So David's approach was to say, well, it's similar maybe if you looked into things like multiple imputation, where you can assume some value for those numbers that you don't have. You put them in your model and you run your model. But then now the difference is in the context of meta-analysis in a Bayesian framework that is very natural, because we do that all the time. We just model parameters as functions of other parameters. What he does here is he puts some non-informative or relaxed assumption on the variance, of this missing variance, that we have it for some of the studies, but some other studies we don't have it. So that we input some kind of value and we run this several times. It's not going to be the result of just one instance that's going to condition the results. And then he puts prior distributions of the parameters of interest. This is really a parameter of interest, and this tau, which is a standard deviation, is another parameter of interest. It's what we want to report. Hopefully when I talk about the case study, it's going to make more difference, this context. So we want to update our belief into mu and tau. We have some priors, but those priors are going to be overwhelmed by the data. So that is the setup, and when we get to the organic versus conventional yields, I'm going to show the implementation. So the other thing that, for those coming in late, I'm not the speaker, I'm not David Makowski, but again, but what David did, he did a search of the literature of meta-analysis and Bayesian methods using agriculture or plant ecology and so on. He found, probably this is one particular sample, 41 documents that mention it, and 22 documents that did an application. And this is the distribution of the over the years. I guess he only found a few, just one paper per year, starting 2007. a few more here in 2010 and 11, and up to six in 2014. I guess 15 is not done yet, so we might see a lot more. But I think it, going back to his original goal, is if we have, when we have a meta-analysis and we have incomplete information, in this case, missing standard deviation, missing value of precision of each individual study, can we still do a meta-analysis the way we want to do it, but be able to fill in the blanks? The number of papers he found: 16 in ecology, 2 in plant pathology, 2 in agronomy, and 2 in plant biology and genetics. In terms of the software, how you actually conduct this, you can use the Bugs, which I don't know if you heard of it, but it's a great name for a computer software program. Just to call it Bugs right from the front and admit it. Then there are several R packages that can be used. JAX is another similar system to Bugs. And then Python is just another computer programming language. So the advantage, one of the advantages, if you haven't used it, Bugs, is that when you do Bayesian meta analysis, they usually solve by what's known as Markov chain Monte Carlo. And Markov chain Monte Carlo just produces a lot of instances of your analysis. But one of the problems is that we judge convergence by whether our estimates are stable or they diverge. And usually packages like OpenBugs will have a lot of internal algorithms that will make those chains behave nicely instead of having too much uncontrolled parameters. So how many of those studies, I think this is my interpretation of what he did. He looked at those 22 studies and see how many of those actually did a comparison between Bayesian methods and classical methods. Because every time statisticians that like to present some alternative methods, you say, well, I want to see the advantages. You know, otherwise, why would I use a different method? So some of these papers did a comparison. What he found is in 5 studies, they found very similar results with both approaches, so there was not an apparent benefit. In some cases, I think when the prior has more relevance, so when you have a small sample size, the Bayesian methods can be a bit more conservative in terms that they're telling your confidence intervals are larger than what you thought with the previous approaches. In one study only, apparently, there was the Bayesian methods dealt with missing data, which is the application we're talking about today. So that allows you to handle a higher number of studies, and it will, in the end, lead to better accuracy. So I think that's his motivation for the work he has done. In terms of what are the real advantages of having some kind of Bayesian framework into a meta-analysis, he said that 6 of the papers apparently proposed no advantage, so just doing Bayesian for the fun of it, I guess. Taking into account the hierarchical structure of the data, which I would argue you can do in classical approaches just as well, but I think in some cases it just leads to more natural parametrization of models. This is one of the main motivations, is to accommodate missing data into a data set. Another example is to explicitly quantify uncertainty. You can quantify uncertainty of some parameters that sometimes we might not be accounting for. And apparently just one paper named the explicit incorporation of prior information. And this is, if you heard of Bayesian methods before or not, this is one part that is sometimes criticized. Like you can try to influence your results a little bit too much with prior information. So apparently it's not necessarily emphasized in some of these applications. So I'm going to present the case study that David worked on, and it's very simple, but I think the motivation in this case, it has some impact. So he was looking at the organic yield and conventional yield, including studies where the within study variance, so the uncertainty or the precision of each measurement in each observation, was missing. This is not his his own paper, but this is a paper that the students Stufford, Romancuti, and Foley, and they compare yields of organic and conventional. And this is one particular result they show in this study. So you can see the one would be where the yields were the same for organic and conventional. So you have organic on the numerator and conventional on the denominator. There you have the average. So we see that in this case, the yields were generally lower in organic systems. He particularly, so we have a lot more data for maize with 74 observations, with wheat with 53, and soybean, barely, and tomato 35. So David thought, well, these two studies, barley and soybean, have a lot less information. So we would think they are a little bit less reliable than the other studies that have more observations. When they describing their methods in their paper, they provided two sets of data, the supplementary data one, the file that contains all the data used in the meta-analysis with the effect sizes and the study size and the precision. But they also, fortunately, in this meta-analysis for this application, they included papers that they explained that did not meet the selection criteria for the meta-analysis. In particular, one of the main reasons why you exclude them is because you do not have information on the error term and sample size. So this was a limitation we saw before. In this data set, we have this 25 observations of soybean yield ratios and 19 of with barley yield ratios. And in the excluded data set, we have just 6 yield ratios that were not included for soybean, but 10 barley yield ratios. So when you think about it, if you have 19 observations that you're actually using, but you're throwing out 10, you're really losing a lot of data in that case. So here is what I would go back to what David did. He basically said, well, I take the original data set, I expand it with a new data set, but I have missing information for the standard deviations of this additional 10 observations. So what you do is you impute some unknown variances, you sample from those, and then you run your chain of multiple iterations. The idea is that your result, the posterior distribution, is going to end up in a suitable place, so you don't have to worry so much about exactly what numbers were imputed in each instance. You're computing the likelihood as well. So this is the example, which might not seem dramatic, but at least it's an application of the method. So here you have the original data set with 19 observations for barley, and in this case, the yield ratio was 0.55, so this barley then in organic systems was yielding only 55% of the ones in conventional. When he expanded the data set, it allows him to include an extra 10 observations, and using the Bayesian method that I described, you see an increase to 0.65 percent of the conventional yields. In the soybean, the difference was not as dramatic. We went from 25 observations to 31 observations, and the difference was not different. But I think the value of this exercise is one technique that will allow you to expand your data set and use the methods traditionally used in meta-analysis. Let's see. So the conclusion is that, at least right now, what he has here is that there are still very few applications of Bayesian methods in meta-analysis in agronomy. I would say that we're not using a lot of Bayesian methods, period, to start with, so maybe even fewer even within the realm of meta-analysis. But the potential benefits of the framework that we saw here is handling missing data, so we don't have to throw away data, but we can include it. As a result of being able to put this missing data into the analysis, we can increase the size of the data set, and you can deal with complex data structures, which I think you can do in classical senses. But he says that there's no big difference in compared to frequency methods. I've been using, in my experience, not David's, I've been using in an application we've been working on recently, I've been using Bayesian methods, and I think they make a dramatic difference in the kind of in the quality of our analysis. But sometimes you have to cherry pick those to find, okay, this is where it really makes a big difference. It has an impact. In some cases, it might not. I was going to say one more thing that it's not here on the slides. It might come back to me. But I think, well, that was David McCoskey's presentation. For those of you who came in late, he's from France, and he was not able to leave the country to make the meeting, so he asked me to present do his presentation in my text. One of the things I'm thinking about is how do I put this in my CV now? Is it really my talk or not my talk? I don't know. So if you have any questions, now I'll try to answer them, or I'll call David. Here's my phone number. I'll call David for the questions. So, yeah, I'm open for questions. I think this must be the last slide. I'm not sure. Herman. Yeah, I think another possibility. I mean, this was a case where he was just looking at the at a missing data in a very kind of simplified way. What I've seen is cases where in frequentist approaches, I think you could do something similar with multiple imputation. You just impute these things, and you just run your classical model. But sometimes when you're dealing with a lot more complex problems than what he has, and I think one of the issues in meta-analysis that can benefit from this is when you actually have correlated variables in your meta-analysis. Here you're just looking at yield of organic versus conventional, but in some other meta-analysis, you might be looking at a lot of response variables. You might be looking at for example, like what Lisa is doing, you might be looking at the leaf level response, the biomass level response, the stomata level response, the yield level response. And the truth is that all those variables from a single study, they're correlated. So how do you deal with that correlation? I think one of the approaches is just here where I'm imputing just the single study level variance. But then in that example, you think it's very hard to estimate the correlations from each individual study. But now, can you do imputation of the correlations as well as the within-study variance to try to solve that problem? I think that's a much more difficult problem. And that's the one example where I think it's much more difficult problem, and I think this is kind of the way to do it. Because the classical approach, you would have to do something similar, but the Bayesian method is just natural. It's a natural extension of how it's done. So thank you, Herman, for the comment. I don't know. Kathy, are you keeping track? One more minute, or we're done. Okay, I'm done. Well.